Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ghouls and ghoulies and ghosties and whoever else is listening. Welcome to the Sludge Pit. And tonight's been pretty interesting over here where Doc is currently located. Actually, why am I talking to third person? Where I'm located. I heard a big boom. Whole house shook. And then I heard a couple pops. And then, well, it got really, really quiet. So I have no idea what that was. But apparently somebody was throwing sticks of dynamite around here about 3 weeks ago. So anyway, so that adorable laugh that you just heard is my co-host, Danae. And tonight, we're going to find out a little bit more about Danae, and it's her show. It's all about you. So, but first, she said that Danae would like to do a little bit of a movie review and talk about something that's on her mind. So go for it.
I always have a lot on my mind. Some things that probably should not come out, but
thank you.
Hello, everyone. As my awesome co-host said, I'm Danae. Y'all probably know who I am by now. Yeah, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty tonight, and no, we're not going to spill all my secrets. I've got to have something to myself, you know. So anyway, last Tuesday, I went to see The Joker. And as you probably know, there's a lot of controversy about it. People are having a, critics are having a fit about it. And even people were having a fit about it before they even saw it. They're trying to say that it's going to cause a lot of violence, particularly incel violence. Now, if you're not familiar with an incel, incel stands for involuntarily celibate, okay? The stereotypical image of the incel is the chubby guy with a neck beard who probably hasn't had a bath in 3 days, lives in his parents' basement, does nothing but play video games. Not that there's anything wrong with playing video games unless you do it all the time. Won't take no for an answer when he's interested in a girl and gets violent if he's rejected. Okay? Actually, most of the gun violence is not perpetuated by incels. Okay? But the only one that was actually perpetuated by an incel would be Elliot Rodger. And while he didn't fit the stereotype, he was actually handsome. He resented women that turned him down, that wouldn't have sex with him, and he resented men that had actually got to date the women that he wanted. He called them Chads and Stacys. But that is the only incident of incels, quote-unquote incel violence, I've ever heard of. And after seeing The Joker, first of all, The Joker it's amazing. It is freaking amazing. Everybody in the movie did a great job, but especially Joaquin Phoenix. And if he does not get nominated, at least nominated for Academy Award, I'm going to be mad. I'm going to be really mad. I really don't give that much of a flip about award shows, but this man deserves it. I feel the same way about Toni Collette for Hereditary, even though I didn't really care that much for the movie. I thought she did an amazing job. But as we all know, these are the kinds of movies that the Academy ignores. So, we'll see. Now, there is a lot of talk, you know, because, well, I really don't want to give too much away. But let's just say that in the movie itself, the character of Arthur Fleck does inspire chaos. Let me just put it to you this way. And people are afraid that there's going to be a repeat of the Colorado shooting, like the one that took place in the theater at The Dark Knight Rises. And in the bigger cities, they've upped security and stuff like that. Here, there was no security at our theater. Nobody really worries about stuff like that in my small town. So, but like I said, I'm rambling. I didn't really plan what I was going to say, but as a movie, it's very good. Everyone did a good job. And yes, there is violence. And when it happens, it's intense. But it is, people make it sound like this gore fest. But it is not a gore fest. What it is a dark character study of a mentally ill man who is abused by society, and he snaps. And, of course, the message might be nice to people or they'll snap, but you know what? You got to be nice to people anyway. And a lot of it is very cringy to watch because you actually sympathize with him, and you hate to see him going through what he's going through. And that's another concern of people, is that because you sympathize with him. But here's the thing, you can sympathize with someone without condoning their actions. And have you seen it yet?
No, I have not, but I saw a trailer way back when they were doing the teaser trailers for Joker. I've been way
you've
too busy.
Got to. When you get a chance, you've got to. So anyway, that's pretty much my opinion. Don't worry about it starting violence. It's not going to start violence any more than any other movie has started violence. Not even The Dark Knight Rises, the movie that was playing. That guy, he was not inspired by the movie. He's even said he wasn't inspired by the movie. He was just a mentally ill man that went on a rampage. So, people, if you want to see this movie, go see it. Don't be afraid.
Yes, I actually had a conversation with my mom about this whole movie. And she's like, oh, it shouldn't be out. It'll incite violence, everything like that. I was trying to explain to her that, you know, the society we live in right now is absolutely terrible, screwed up, messed up. It's just plain yucky. You know, people who do these type of things, these horrible shootings, murders, there's something wrong with them. You know, well, with mass murder, I'm trying to say that there's instability that a person has to do these type of things. It's most, 99% of times, it's not triggered by watching a movie. It's set off by not having the proper care, being abused by people in real life, not having the proper medications. And unfortunately, there's such a stigma in the United States about mental illness and the lack of care that people can get because of bad insurance or just, well, people in general. It makes really life for these people very, very hard. All they want to do is live a normal life, you know, get the care that they need, deserve, and should be given, but they can't. And it just kind of balls up, and it just, sometimes people break, and they just need a little bit of help. But unfortunately, it's like we can't get it to them.
Well, that's one of the things that he says in the movie. He doesn't really see a therapist. He goes and he sees a social worker, and then she recommends to the doctor to give him his medication, and he's on 6 different ones. And at their last session, he has to quit his therapy and his medication because the funding's cut wherever he's going. And he's like, I don't ever feel like you don't even listen to me, do you? And she just looked at him, and she's like, why? He goes, you don't even listen to me. I sit here, I come here every week, I talk and talk, but you don't even really listen to me. You don't even really care. You asked me if I've had any negative thoughts. All I have is negative thoughts. And you never listen. And I wanted to cry when I heard that.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate true thing. You know, I've seen the therapist out here where I am now. Getting help in therapy is a real hard thing to deal with and to get. You know, being where I was before in a small town, you go to a therapist or a psychologist, it seems like it's easier to find somebody who actually cares and just doesn't write prescriptions, you know, actually wants to get to the root of the problem before they say, hey, here's several drugs for you. Out here, it's like, okay, you've got two sessions until your funding runs out, and if that doesn't work, either you're on your own or they'll pay that guy down the road $1,000 to say, oh, you're depressed, here's some pills, and they may not be the right ones for you, and that's so unfortunate. And it's really annoying and bad. I mean, having to go through therapy myself, you know, I have to admit the best therapist I've had is back home, and the ones out here are just like, well, you got two sessions. Let's go. All right, next, and that's it.
So you can relate to that. I don't think you ever listen. You can relate to that.
Yeah, I can. I can relate to that because I've been there, but I had enough common sense to actually go home for a while with my family and find someone else. But there's also, you know, the affordability of finding somebody else, the insurance, because therapy is not cheap. I mean, your usual just regular therapist is between $75 and $150 per session. Depending on their policies, a session could be 30 minutes, it could be 20 minutes, it could be an hour. Sometimes that's not enough.
Insurance doesn't always pay for it, or if they pay for a small, tiny bit of it.
Exactly. And with some insurances, they'll give you two trial runs, aka two sessions, and that's it. And if you can't afford the rest of the sessions, or you know, you don't like, or you aren't comfortable with your therapist, and you want to get another one, that's on you. That's 100%. You have to take care of that 100%. And just
unless you're part of an HMO, then you don't have a choice.
Right. I mean, you know, but it gets to the point where it's like, who can afford an HMO? I mean, I'm looking. I have this new job that I'm making a considerable amount more money than I was before. And I unfortunately have to drop my insurance that I've had through the state and get the company's insurance, which is $235 a month, which only has about one-third the amount of coverage that my insurance that I had through the state, because I was making less than $12,000 a year working as a school bus driver. So it's really hard to be able to get the care you need nowadays. And it's so sad.
And it's like you're penalized if you make more money.
Exactly. We're taxed more, which is completely obvious because they take a certain percentage. We have to pay out more in taxes, and yet we get less, and we have less for ourselves. I was literally ranting about this the other day to someone. I'm saying, okay, I'm making $30,000 more per year, but now I have officially less money for an apartment that I did when I was making, you know, $8,000 a year being a school bus driver. Figure that one out. I have less money for an apartment at $39,000 a year. For you know, fixing my truck, and so on and so on and so on, than I did making $8,000 to $9,000 a year making a school bus driver. How the hell does that work?
It's screwed up. And, you know, I don't care, and I'm sorry to get political, folks, but I don't care what political party they represent. Any presidential, any mayoral, any gubernatorial candidate, they make all these promises to get elected, and then they get into office, and they don't do anything. And as far as the mental health thing is concerned, another thing that people were complaining about was that they felt like that it criminalized mental illness. Well, here's the thing. Sometimes mentally ill people commit crimes. I mean, not all of them commit crimes, but some of them do.
Yeah, and,
hello?
You know, yeah, I'm still here. I'm still here. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, and it's just the way society, it's, okay, how am I going to say this properly? It seems that our society that we have today views any form of mental illness as a severe weakness and takes advantage of those people who have a mental illness. And it's just, it's scary to me that society has become like that. You know, these people are not weak. People who are depressed, they are not weak. They are some of the strongest people you ever know, but they, because of a chemical imbalance in their brains, they have problems functioning. That is not a weakness. You know, schizophrenia, I have a friend of mine who's very, very close to me. He has full-blown schizophrenia. He's on medications, and he's got his bad days. He's got more good. He has more good days. But if you met him outside, you know, our friendship, you would never know that he has full-blown schizophrenia. Because of medications, caring family, and loving friends, he's functional. But I'm just so upset with the way Americans treat people with mental illness. Or if there's any type of, you know, physical abnormality, or, you know, a person is handicapped, I'm so appalled by the way we treat people. Anyway.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead. We should get back on track. But anyway, go ahead and say what you're going to. Sorry about that.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay, huh? I mean, you know, this is the way we do it. We get into these tangents and we get into free-for-all. It's just two friends talking, right?
Exactly.
But what you were saying, the reason why I jumped in is because what you were saying kind of touched on some of the themes in the movie is because, now granted, he's not so far gone that he doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, he's able to take responsibility for the things that he does. So I'm not condoning his action, and I'm not totally blaming the Gotham healthcare system for his predicament. But, you know, what you're saying is kind of, you know, it's kind of the point of what they're trying to get across. It's like he has a mother who's not, he's raised by a woman who is not stable herself. There's no father figure. In fact, he's so lacking a father figure that he fantasizes that this talk show host that he's never met, he sees him as a father figure, even though he's never met this man, doesn't know anything about him. He's just so thirsty for a stable parental figure, and he doesn't really have any friends. He has people who say they're his friends, but then they end up turning his back on him. He's very awkward because of his depression. And he's probably got social anxiety disorder, too. He's very awkward. And he has this condition to where whenever he gets nervous, he laughs uncontrollably. And that causes him to be a target of bullying to no end. And it's like no one really seems to care about this man. You know, they look at him as, he makes them uncomfortable. They look at him as a target of derision. And instead of looking at him and going, maybe this man needs some help. Maybe this man needs a friend. Why does he laugh like that? He even has a card that he hands to people that mentions his condition, and people still look at him like he's loony. And that is a legit, I forgot what it's called, but it is a legitimate condition. So, okay. On the Batwoman. Did you have any more thoughts, Eric?
Well, hugs for everybody. I think that helps
out a little bit. Hey, we could all use some hugs.
Yes, I agree 100% with that.
Okay, now back to Batwoman. There's still some outrage here, but it's a little bit more lighthearted. Well, you know, most of you who've either heard me talk or who know me in real life know how much I am against PC culture and radical feminism and all that stuff. Well, the trailer for the new CW series, Batwoman, came out. And a lot of us anti-SJW people, we lost our crap. We did. I'm myself included, because the trailer is awful. I mean, she says stuff like when she's wanting Luke Fox, who's the son of Lucius Fox, she wants him to alter Batman's suit. He says it's perfect. She says it will be when it fits a woman, which she could have said it will be when it fits me. And then there's another line in the trailer where she says, I'm not going to let a man take credit for a woman's work, which could have been said, I'm not going to let someone else take credit for my work. You know, I would advise everybody to go on YouTube and look at the trailer. It's very cringy. Well, people were complaining about the show and complaining about the trailer, and the show hadn't even come out yet. Well, last Sunday, it debuted, and I watched it, and guess what? I've only seen the first episode, and I will watch the second episode tonight or tomorrow, but I thought it was actually really good, and there was nothing social justice-y about it at all. You know, it's just the way that they cut the trailer, it was terrible.
Really?
The
trailer was really badly put together. That doesn't bode well. You know, if people go, ugh, at the trailer, I hope they would give the show a chance.
Well, I know, because the point of the trailer is to entice people to at least give your movie or TV show a chance, you know. But
right. Like
I said, I watched it and I thought it was great, okay? Like I said, it was very well written, and Ruby Rose, I mean, this was the perfect role for her. Now, there was a lot of controversy about her casting. The SJWs have this thing in which they don't seem to grasp the concept of acting. Like, for instance, they think only trans actors should play trans people, only gay actors should play gay people. Okay, well, Ruby Rose is a lesbian, or she's either a lesbian or bisexual. And they had a problem because Catherine Kane, a.k.a. Batwoman, is supposed to, well, Catherine Kane is a lesbian in the comics, okay, but she's also Jewish. Ruby Rose is not Jewish. So, and another problem they have is that Ruby Rose is white. However, Catherine Kane is white. So,
you know, it's you can't
Okay, that's just kind of off the wall a bit. Well,
I know, you can't make these people happy. It's like they were complaining about Danny Rand on the Iron Fist not being Asian. They were losing their minds because Finn Jones, a white British dude, got cast. But here's the thing. Danny Rand in the comic books, now I have not, I just want to put this out there. I guess some of you might consider me a normie because I haven't read the comic books in years. I do watch superhero movies, though, and I do my research. So Danny Rand in the Iron Fist comics was white. And the place that he came from, Kunlun, while they do have, like, Shaolin-type Asian monks in charge, it's actually a very multicultural place. I mean, you got white people, you got Asian people, you've got Middle Eastern type people, they're all over the place. At least that's what I understood from my research. I could be wrong. But it's like, God forbid you should cast a white character, a white person as a white character. Anyway, so she's white. She's not Jewish. So she was the wrong. And another thing they complained about, well, she's not an activist. Why does she have to be an activist? So I'm not going to go on this tangent for very long. I'm just going to say, I think she's perfect for it. Now, the first thing I ever saw her in was The Meg, which I love the movie. Great shark movie. Just don't compare it to Jaws. If you don't compare it to Jaws, you'll go in there just fine. Nothing compares to Jaws. And aside from it being a totally different type of shark movie, nothing compares to Jaws, in my opinion. But The Shallows comes close. But anyway, I know I'm rambling. I should have written
a
script.
No, you are doing fantastic, my dear. Get going.
Thank you. But anyway, like I said, Ruth, I thought she was great in The Meg, and she's really, really good as Catherine Kane, Batwoman. And the thing about Batwoman, Catherine Kane has had some kind of combat training, but yet she's not a Mary Sue. She's relying on the gadgets as much as Batman relied on his gadgets, and there's been a couple times where she's gotten kidnapped, and she's gotten her ass kicked. So, I mean, she's a capable fighter. She's a good fighter, but she's human. And I like that they show that. You know, she's not a Mary Sue. She's not perfect. And she's had to be rescued a couple times herself. And I like that. She seems more real. I like more heroes like her than I do these mutants and metahumans. Because you can relate to them more, and plus you can really feel like they're in danger. The others, you're like, they'll get out of it. But, you know, people like her and Batman and Daredevil, you can care about them, and you can empathize with them, and you can actually feel for them if they're in danger. So anyway, let me get on to the other thing that's irritating me.
Absolutely.
It has gotten like an 8% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, I don't, every once in a while I go to Rotten Tomatoes to check it out of curiosity. And when I do, I don't like make my decisions by it. But when I do check, I go for more the audience score than I do the critical score. And of course, the Roke critics out there, the same ones that are bashing the Joker, are really playing up Batwoman. But it's got like an 8% audience score. And that bugs me. And I think the reason why it's got an 8% is because a lot of people were turned off by the trailer. Well, now we've got tons and tons of videos. I watched a couple of them. I won't watch them all because they piss me off. On YouTube, from the anti-SJW community, my community, that are going on and on about this low rating. And here's the thing that bugs me, Eric. They want this show to fail. And I don't understand why. It's like all of a sudden, because of SJWs, it's like they don't want any kind of female action hero. I think about the only female action heroes that they have not complained about are Wonder Woman and Alita, which, by the way, those were awesome movies. Please check them out. But it's like, and Captain Marvel, I cannot judge Captain Marvel. I know there's a lot of big controversy about Captain Marvel, mainly because of Brie Larson shooting off her mouth, but I've got it in my Netflix DVD queue, and I'm going to watch it with an open mind. I'm just, I don't know, I'm rambling again, but this just pisses me off. It's like anything with an action hero, a female action hero, or a woman who has, like, maybe said some things that people don't like, it's like they automatically want to shoot it down and, oh, well, they're just acting like men. They're acting like men. Anytime you have a woman in an action role, oh, they're acting like men. No, they're not acting like men. Please, calm down.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think that
I'm off my soapbox. Thank you for attending my TED Talk.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Now, I think it's just that people are strung so tight right now and just angry with everything in general that they'll hone into the most ridiculous things and just launch anger at it. And then other people will say, ooh, something to get angry at. Not really, but that's how people's minds work with some things. Sometimes when, oh, something to get angry and uptight about, and just go, and just it spreads and it's ridiculous. It's this whole angry thing and, you know, this social justice stuff. And I mean, yeah, there's some stuff I've gotten annoyed with, but you know what I do about it? I either change the channel, keep on scrolling, or just walk away, or, well, I would play with Spooky, but I can't do that now because he's home and I'm here.
Tinker both will be with you soon.
Yes, they will. Now, it's not that hard to just go, oh, okay, so this doesn't look very good as a trailer. Let's move on. But it seems like everybody's got a bloody agenda nowadays when it comes to – that's like a mindset. Everybody's got an agenda. We got to fight their agenda, blah, blah, blah. Well, there's some entertainers out there that just want to entertain you and don't really have an agenda beyond that. Like there's this one young lady who is on YouTube that reviews movies, and she makes it, and I'm sitting as an outsider watching her videos, and I actually stopped after about five of them because I couldn't deal with it anymore. She makes every single film sound like it's got this major agenda going on, which, okay, some movies do, some don't. Okay, yes, Night of the Living Dead was about racism and that was a huge, huge, huge topic when Night of the Living Dead was made. But then there's other movies like, oh, the Smurfs, that have no agenda whatsoever besides being really, really dumb and, a movie to make money. But yet there's some people who will go, oh, there's an agenda in Smurfs. They want to make you buy cheesy poofs or something. Fight the power of cheesy poofs. this is how ridiculous it's getting out there, people.
Oh, yeah. I was watching YouTube earlier, and one of the YouTubers I follow was, I can't remember if it was the New York Post, the New York Times, but he was going over this, oh, no, it was the Daily Wire. And it was about this article about the professor, this professor, who is claiming that SpongeBob is about colonizers.
Oh, yeah.
Supposedly,
yeah,
Bikini Bottom is actually underneath Bikini Atoll, where they did all this nuclear testing, and all the characters in there are mutated sea lice because of the nuclear stuff. And SpongeBob SquarePants is a colonizer. He's, like, taking all of the sea land and stuff like that. And Tim Pool, he's the YouTuber that was reading this article, and he's like, you know what? I hope this is a parody. I really hope the Daily Wire is being trolled. But you know what?
Oh, yeah.
It sounds too ridiculous. It sounds like something that would be on The Onion or The Daily Beef or one of those parody sites. But I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't a parody, because there are people that see this in everything. They see racism, homophobia, sexism, transphobia, and everything. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were people, I mentioned Smurfs earlier, and there were people for a while saying that the Smurfs promoted communism, group sex, all sorts of weird shit. And it's Smurfs. It's a cartoon. It's a bunch of little blue, Smurfs. And it's like, okay. I don't see that, but I did hear about that article about that professor saying it was like, I can't say the word that you used for it, but it's basically about how Americans ripped up all these people out of that lived in the Bikini Atoll in that area and just tossed them to the side and just like, oh, move to this island, and then nuke the place. That's basically what this professor's talking about. And I read that, I went, yep, whatever drugs this gentleman is on, I should stay very, very far away from, because they might melt my brain even further.
Oh, this woman who wrote this, what scares me is that I forgot which university. She's a professor. This is a person that is taking our young adults, our barely legal teenagers, and is one of the people that's supposed to groom them into being responsible adults. And they're filling their head. She's filling their head with this crap, and she's not the only one. I'm saying, nowadays, I'm not a paranoid type person or given to conspiracy theories, but I'm just saying, don't go to college. Go to a trade school. That's basically where I'm at this point.
Well, for me, it just seems like, the whole agenda thing with people, you know, with movies and whatever, it just, some people get this strange ideas and just run with them and spread them to other people. And it's like, once again, I'm going to annoy a lot of people when I say this, it is like the virus of stupidity. Okay, it just seems that it spreads like a virus, and people are starting to believe some of the really, really dumbest things. Like, as a joke, let's say Bigfoot is married to some supermodel who happens to be an ex-president's lover. I mean, that's something you hear in World Weekly News, and people are throwing it out there like it's 100% fact. It's just like, wait a minute. Have you actually verified any of this? You know, and people never do. They just, like, throw it on Facebook like people eat it and believe it. Or excuse me, not eat it, but read it and believe it. It's very, very scary.
Oh, yeah. It's
very
like these 9/11 truthers and these flat earthers that will tell you, well, we have proof. And you say, okay, well, show me. Oh, I can't show it. I'll get killed. You can't show me because you don't have it.
Oh, yeah. And I love some of these people who would, you know, turn around these papers saying that certain historical events didn't happen, which I will not mention these historical events because just mentioning of it does bring back painful memories for people. So I will not mention exactly what it is. But
I know it's what you're talking about.
Right. And they hand out flyers saying, you know, this didn't happen. I'll think, well, where's your proof? Oh, well, this guy said this. I'm like, okay, where's his proof? Oh, well, he heard it from this guy. I'm like, okay, where's his proof? Well, all the factories. I'm like, I did not ask you about factories. I'm asking you about humans here. Oh, well, with all the damage, I did it. Factual, please, and thank you. There are no facts.
Did you know that people have been taken to court over this? And
oh, yeah.
Anytime anyone is taken to court over this, the deniers end up losing and looking like idiots.
Oh, of course. Oh, I know that. I've seen it. It's like, how could you? Anyway. Yeah. Of course, I'm supposed to be interviewing you sometime tonight.
I'm sorry. I got on a tangent.
Ah, that's okay. Yeah, we both kind of went like, hello, everybody. Okay, so. Oof, all right. Let me see here. All right. So
well, I think they've gotten to learn a lot about me in this bit of time already. They learned to know where I stand on certain issues.
Yeah, me too. I stand on certain things and happen to be my shoes. Oh, but no, bad joke. I know. That was a dad joke, wasn't it?
That's okay.
I stand.
You don't have to be a dad to say a dad joke.
This is true. And you don't even have to be male to have dad jokes either. So there.
Oh,
there's
I've
also
had
mom jokes.
Care, trust me.
Oh, yeah. All right. So, today.
Yeah.
My awesomest co-host and really, really awesome friend. All right. So, let's actually start off about podcasting since we're doing that right now. So what made you decide to get into podcasting in the past?
Well, I got involved in this group on Facebook called Horror Films. And
okay.
I met a guy in the group named Daniel Shine. And we became Facebook friends, and we had some interaction through the group and through DMs. And the next thing I know, I get a message from a guy named Chris McGibbon, said that he was wanting my phone number because he was already on a podcast, the Horror Theater, and he wanted to talk to me because they were wanting another co-host, and Daniel recommended me. So I gave him my phone number, I gave him his or he gave me mine. Anyway, we got in touch on the phone, and he said that Daniel recommended me because some of the reviews that I've done, I have a Facebook page where I do reviews. I did reviews. I haven't added any in a while. But and also, I've had some rants on there that he really liked, and so he wanted to know if I would want to join them. So it started out as Horror Scare Theater or something like that. I feel bad because I can't remember the name it started out with, and then it became Creepshow Radio. And it started out with me, Chris McGibbon, Daniel Shine, and Jennifer Holderness. And we all did a show together where we did movie reviews. We always had a segment where we discussed the latest episode of Walking Dead. And then eventually Kevin Tex Hayes joined the show, and we had different co-hosts, and we had different shows. I ended up being on a couple other shows. I was on a show with Brian Harris, and then I also did a World Cinema show with Rich Carone and Lewis. They kind of like, we mainly talked about world cinema, like stuff like from Jess Franco, and we covered a lot of the European cinema. That's what we really did. Lewis Paul. Forgive me, Lewis, I forgot your last name. Yeah, it was me, Rich Carone, known as Rabid Rich on Facebook, and Lewis Paul. And we had a show in which we would discuss European cinema. And they wanted me on that show because they wanted to a female perspective. Because, you know, to be honest, I love European cinema from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But I'm not blind. A lot of it was misogynistic. And so basically they kind of wanted a female point of view.
Cool.
And basically because it's like it seems kind of contradictory because I am a woman, yet I love this stuff. And I can recognize the time that it came from and acknowledge it and still be a fan. So anyway, that went on for a while, and then eventually, I don't remember exactly what happened. We couldn't afford to keep the show going, so we had to stop the show, which was very, very sad, because I really, really enjoyed doing it. And then Tex talked to me through DMs and wanted to start up another one that was not just horror, but was basically horror, superhero, fantasy, comic books, gaming, stuff like that. So he started Geeks Radio, and I ended up doing a show with him, and I also did and then Geeks Radio, we couldn't do Geeks Radio anymore, so then we ended up with the KSDAD Radio with Stephen Ronquillo and Carl Kaper, and then that's how I met you.
Yes, it is.
So basically, then that kind of fell apart, and now we're here we are today.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we are held together with super glue, duct tape, and a waffle iron is in there someplace, so we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I think we're doing good. We're all hanging on to each other for dear life.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes it gets pretty crazy.
We've had our hiccups, too, but we're not giving up.
Nope. Yeah, everything's under control. Okay. All right. So,
It's a lot more interesting journey than the way that I made it sound.
Well, you've been podcasting for quite a while then. It sounds for at least 6-8 years.
Well, no. Well, yeah. Since 2009, 2010, somewhere around then. It's been a while.
Oh, cool. So about 10 years. Very cool. Very cool. Now, you know, being a person interested in media like myself, what are some of your favorite fandoms or favorite genres that you like to explore?
Well, obviously I'm a big horror geek, but I also like sci-fi and fantasy. Not really that much into what they call hard sci-fi, although there are a few hard sci-fi movies that I do enjoy, but I'm more into sci-fi fantasy, stuff like Star Trek, Star Wars. Don't get me started on this. All I'm going to say is I think I'm one of the few people that don't hate on the prequel trilogies of Star Wars, and
I don't hate on The Last Jedi or The Force Awakens, and I'm really looking forward to The Rise of Skywalker. That's all I'm going to say on that, because I could do a whole nother show on that. I'm also into anime.
Excellent. Now, you got to tell me, I know you're really, really big into anime. Excuse me, I got the hiccups. Sorry about that, everybody. But what really got you interested in anime?
Actually, what got me interested in anime was, well, when I was a kid, I watched Speed Racer. And then as an older teenager, I got into stuff like Gotcha Man, only it was shown as Battle of the Planets here, and Voltron, Jason the Wheeled Warrior, stuff like that. And then later on in the 90s, Encore started showing anime on Wednesday nights, and I got into stuff like Gokaiser and Curse of the Yoma and Iria the Animation and stuff like that, Neon Genesis Evangelion, and the Columbia Record and Tape Company. I don't know if it was them. It was actually similar, but they had a club where you would get a certain VHS tapes of certain anime series a month. And I was, like I said, I was exposed to the Curse of the Yoma, Ninja Scrolls stuff, some of the more darker stuff that I didn't know existed out there. So that's basically how I got into it. And now it's practically everywhere, especially on streaming. But back then, we just
kind of
had to hunt for it.
Yes, we did. I remember going to Suncoast Video and Media Play Sam Goody back in the late 80s or the 90s, where they didn't exactly have an anime section, but they had the little signs that I'm going to get cursed out for this one. Saying that they did not call it anime back then. They called it Japanimation. And we all kind of went, ooh, ow. But sometimes they're all mixed in with.
It's funny that you said that, because I had always heard it called as anime. And then I went to my local Hastings, and they had a section on it, and they're like, Japanimation. And then I'm like, what the heck is that? And then I'm looking at the titles, and I'm like, oh, it's anime.
Yeah. Now, do you have like a certain favorite anime series or movies?
Movies. I love Ninja Scroll. I really love Ninja Scroll. I love Akira.
Okay.
Series I love are Death Note. Shiki's a really good vampire series. Also, Higurashi When They Cry. I could go on. Outlaw Star.
Oh,
Outlaw Star.
That was so good.
Vampire
Sorry,
Princess
cool.
Miyu. I've got the Robotech set, but I haven't even watched it yet, but I've heard it's really good. Not really much into Slice of Life school anime, but I do love Say I Love You. A lot of people crap on this one, but I like School Days. The ending floored me because, you know, I wasn't expecting it to go in that direction, but I actually like School Days. A lot of people hate School Days. I also like Tokyo Ghoul.
Ooh.
Oh, man. And also, I got the set of Beast King Goleon, which is the original Voltron. See, what a lot of people don't know is that Beast King Goleon was a lot darker.
Oh,
and
yeah.
What they did is,
I was agreeing with you. I said, yeah, they show things like cannibalism, murder, all sorts of heavy-duty stuff, where in America here, it's like, oh, Sven? Oh, he didn't die. He went to a different planet. No, he didn't. He's dead. He's better than a doornail.
Well, that's the thing. I loved Voltron, but it confused me so much because it's like characters would just disappear. And what they did is that they basically chopped it up and they spliced on they spliced it with another series called Dieruger. Dieruger 5 or something like that. And, you know, if you're a kid, of course, I was a little older when I saw this, so I don't know how it would be if a real young child saw this, but I liked the show, but a lot of it just didn't make any sense. And so now I'm watching the Beast King Goleon, and I'm just like, wow. This is not the show I watched as a kid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's dark. Dark, 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 dark. Yeah, when I grew up with Voltron also, and I used to watch it every day on the USA Channel with their cartoon train or something, every day before my father used to bring me to school. Because back in those days, my father was the superintendent of our school system until he passed. But anyway, yeah, good Voltron memories. I love Voltron.
I can't watch it anymore. I haven't seen the new one on Netflix yet, but I can't hardly watch. After seeing Beast King Goleon, I can't hardly watch the older ones anymore. And, of course, it's like, oh, I can't, darn it. I can't remember the name of it, but it'd be easy to search out. There was a YouTuber that did a video that was a side-by-side comparison of Voltron and the original Beast King Goleon. And it's funny because he'll go through something that happened on Voltron, and he'll say, and this is how it happened, but not really. And then he'll do the original stuff from Beast King Goleon. It is hilarious when you watch the comparisons.
Sounds like it. Now, I was actually having a conversation with my mom when she was visiting yesterday, and we were looking at apartments here locally, and we talked about our favorite and least favorite movie theater experiences. And when she was a little girl, back in the 1950s, her grandmother, which would be my great-grandmother, would bring her to the movies on school nights to go see different films. And the reason why is because back in those times, movie theaters gave away free things. Like, for example, they would give away one piece of a dining set. Now, our family, we still have these were dining sets for 12 people, and we have 3 to 5 complete sets in our attic from my mom and her grandmother going to movie theaters. And she was telling me that she went to go see Creature from the Black Lagoon, a couple other movies, and some movies that really, really scared the hell out of her. And she's like, I will always remember, I forgot what titles they were exactly, but I'd actually like to have her on the show one of these days to talk about those experiences. So, when you were younger, what is a standout memory of going to a movie or to a live theater or to a show that you have?
Well, I remember when I would go visit my aunt and uncle. They lived in, first they lived in Garland and then they lived in Rowlett. They're suburbs of the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I had seen Star Wars before, but I got to see it at the drive-in that summer, which was really awesome because we had a drive-in at the time, but Star Wars wasn't showing at it. My first showing of Star Wars was at a regular theater, but I don't know, it was something special about the drive-in because my uncle had a van with a sunroof. So my sister and my cousins and I would sit up on the roof of the van while watching Star Wars. And it was awesome. I mean, crappy speakers and all. It was awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. That is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. This was when I was older, but another funny experience I had, one of the things I love is positive audience participation. And a friend of mine and I went to go see the original Pet Sematary. And, okay, if anybody who hasn't seen the original Pet Sematary, I'm about to drop a spoiler here, but there's this one scene at the end where the father, Lewis, he's just absolutely lost it. And even though he knows he shouldn't, he goes and he buries his wife in the cemetery. Well, he's sitting there waiting for her, and she comes in, and even though she's all bloody and icky looking, he just, like, comes up, and, of course, he's glad to see her. Like I said, he's lost it. He puts his arms around her, and then she has a knife, and she reaches up, and just as she's about to stab him, the screen goes black, and someone behind me goes, "Hi, honey, I'm home." Everybody in the theater just broke up laughing. Way to break the tension. Oh.
Very cool, very cool. Now, I have to ask you a question that you asked me this past weekend. What got you into exploitation films? Because I know you really like them.
Well, when I was a kid, of course, when I first started watching them, I didn't know they were called exploitation films. Basically, what I first got into was what they now call hicksploitation. You know, all those backwood ones. We had HBO, and also we had they were kind of like horror hosts, you know, those, you know how they'd have like Saturday Nightmares and stuff like that, but only except they would be like cheesy, like drive-in type movies, and a lot of them were like your backwoods hillbilly ones, like Moonshine County Express, Big Bad Mama, Macon County Line, Jackson County Jail, stuff like that. And I don't know why. As a young kid, you know, I watched these and I really loved them, of course, and I like stuff like, I don't know if this counts, but I also like stuff like Smokey and the Bandit and Walking Tall was another one of my favorites. Anything like that, small town, backwoods, I loved them. And then I started getting into the more, I don't know, I hate to say darker fare, but yeah, darker fare. Like you're more horror or thriller oriented type. I also started getting into Russ Meyer films. May he rest in peace.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I love stuff like that. I love horror. I love action. Like I said, I love the hicksploitation, you know, the kind of the backwoods type. Like I said, I would see those kinds of movies on TV, on HBO Uncut and on TV Cut, and I just became an addict. I never used to call myself an action fan, but then I realized a lot of the movies that I watched back then were action. The ones I just mentioned, and then, of course, there were the Chuck Norris movies and the martial arts movies with the terrible dubbing, stuff like Action Jackson, Invasion USA, the Rambo films.
Nice.
I just ate it up. I ate it up.
Awesome. Very awesome. Now, I do have a, this is kind of a deeper question. I'm trying to think of how I can actually say this the right way. Okay. Being a fan of things that are a bit more that are a bit on the more risque side or like the horror side. Do you feel that you have a very strong faith as a person? Do you think people who have strong faith should be okay with themselves being fans of horror movies, exploitation films, and stuff like you are?
Well, but see, I can't speak for everybody, Eric. That's an individual thing. I mean, that's between that person and God. And
right.
It's me, for the most part, I can divorce my entertainment from my faith. Now, there are some times, I will be honest, there are some times that I'll start watching a movie or reading a book or listening to a song, and I'm just like, no, I can't. And that's when, and this is going to sound corny because I'm going to start talking Christian speak here, okay?
No, that's
this is
that's
when I feel
okay.
The stirring in my spirit that's like, no, don't. This is not for you. It's not like I feel like I'm going to go to hell if I listen to this song or watch this movie or read this book or play this game. It's more like it's not going to be good for me. It's not going to make me feel good. It's going to stay with me. It's going to make me uncomfortable. So what I have to say is that to any of my fellow Christian geeks out there, pray about it. It's between you and God. Don't let anyone else influence you. Don't let anyone tell you you're going to go to hell or you're not a very good Christian. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, that's between you and God. Pray about it. That's all I have to say.
Very good. So it's definitely more of a comfort level thing. That's very understandable.
Even non-Christians have their boundaries when it comes to this stuff.
Of course.
And everyone's boundaries are different.
Right. Like, there's certain movies that I won't watch or certain comic books or books that I just don't get into because it's my comfort level. I'll actually use the Joker as an example. I really personally do not want to see the movie. It's not because, I disagree with it or whatever, I'm not going to say it's a bad movie. It's just, there's a lot of things when it comes to society and everything that hit a little bit too close to home. So that would put me in a very uncomfortable position emotionally, and I do not want to see the movie because of that. This is also the reason why I do not like to watch anything romantic because it just kind of tweaks me a little bit, and I don't feel comfortable. So that's why I pretty much stick to, giant lizards smashing Tokyo and monster movies and so on, because there's not really emotional attachment, and that's what makes me more comfortable. I go to a film or read a book or look at an article to be entertained or to learn something, in the case of an article or documentary, but I just need to switch off the brain and move to a reality that maybe not so real. That's what I really need. That's what I prefer to do. So I can fully understand and agree with the comfort level of different people's comfort level for being interested in different things, without a doubt.
Well, it's like that song from that band Ghost that I started to play on YouTube, and I was fine until it started going Hail Satan, and then I'm like, nope. Not going to criticize anyone who listens to it, but it's not for me.
I told you about the time I actually scared a bunch of nuns with that, right?
No, you didn't. I got to hear the story.
I still feel bad about this one because I had no intention whatsoever of upsetting anybody. That's not one of the things I like to do. It was kind of like one of those, a little bit of a chuckle, but like, oh, that was bad. So I was having a particularly bad day when I was actually in this area to begin with about 5 years ago. I was very ill. But anyway, so I listened to a lot of hard, heavy, nasty stuff that a lot of people would just go, ew, to. And the song Year Zero by Ghost is one of the songs I like to listen to because just the way that the song is put together, I really enjoy it. It's just one of those, oh, this is awesome, for me at least. But, you know, because of the lyrics, a lot of people would be very uncomfortable with it. So this is one of those listen at your own risk type things. So I'm driving down, was it Broad Street or Bleecker Street? It was Bleecker Street from Genesee out past, where is it going? But anyway, so I have the song Year Zero by Ghost cranked in my truck. Now, my truck has got a massive sound system in it, 12-inch subs. I can rumble the neighborhood. So I've got Ghost, like, on level 40. I'm at a stoplight in front of a Catholic church. Now, I didn't think anything of it until the nuns came out of the door and the whole, Hail Satan! Part being sang.
Oh, my gosh.
And they looked extremely scared and started doing sign of the crucifix and, you know, praying and everything. I'm like, oh, my God, that's actually funny, but I shouldn't be laughing because I feel horrible.
Oh, poor women.
I scared, involuntarily scared or annoyed two nuns with the song by Ghost, and I had no intention of doing so, and I feel bad. But I like the song.
You know what? This is horrible, but you know what I feel like doing sometime with missionaries? And, you know, I'm a Christian myself. So here's the thing. If you're trying to preach to me, it's like you're preaching to the choir, you know. And, you know, I don't care if you think that I'm going to hell because I'm not going to your church or because I'm not a Mormon or Jehovah's Witness. You know what? I'm not interested. And so sometimes if they ignore me and they keep going on, I just want to yell, Hail, I just want to say, Hail Satan, just to get rid of them. I know that sounds awful, but the older I get, the less patience I have with people who won't take no for an answer.
Yeah. So, I still, this happened 5 years ago, and I still remember because I felt bad. But it's just kind of like, oh, that wasn't good, you know.
Well, you didn't do it on purpose.
Exactly. But it's just like I didn't mean to disturb them. I didn't mean to disturb anybody, but it just seems to happen sometimes. But anyway. All right. Back on track here. So, all right. So, when working on the sludge pit here, what are some of the ideas you have for future shows, and where would you like to, you know, where would you like to steer things every once in a while with the show?
Well, I definitely want us to start planning things out ahead of time.
Without a doubt.
You get more settled, and in the meantime, I'll be coming up with ideas. I want to do. Well, there's the typical, our favorite films or films that influenced us. I also want to do a show in the future. It's like what we were talking about earlier. There are people on both sides who see an agenda and everything.
Yeah.
And so I want to do a show, you know, films with social commentary. When does social commentary become an agenda?
Yes.
And I would like us to research and pick a few films to talk about and see whether if we think it's just social commentary or if it's propaganda.
Right. You know,
and
I would actually
how
like
to tell the line between the two.
When things get back on track, I would definitely like to schedule that really soon because as I don't know if our listeners know, I've actually kind of picked up everything and moved to Central New York. I'm actually staying at an Airbnb run by a wonderful family, and I'm trying to find an apartment. And right now, things are really chaotic because I'm adjusting to my new tech job and trying to find an apartment and trying to find time to breathe and actually, like, script on a show, figure all that stuff out is really kind of tight because my time is really tight. So Danae has been awesome and figuring a lot of things out and doing some logistics for me and doing a whole bunch of stuff for the show, and I appreciate it so much. So
thank you. I haven't felt like I've done that much, so I'm glad you do.
Well, you're the one over there going, hey, we need to do a show this Sunday. Oh, yeah, we do. Oh, yeah, yes, we do. Let's do a show. Okay, yeah. Because I'm just so crazy busy. But I would definitely.
Well, that's understandable. And you've done a lot for this. You and Carl have been our backbone. And I appreciate so much y'all giving me this chance.
Chance, honey, you are family. You're going to be with us through this whole thing. So there. Oh, yeah. So as soon as I get things settled down, I would like to actually do the show, the agendas and film, probably the first or second week in November. So that way
Okay. We
actually have we can get prepared for that, and we can do research and get notes taken and everything all set, so we can actually have a like awesome, full of great information show for everybody. And I think that'd be really cool.
And around Thanksgiving, I want to do another live watch of Blood Freak.
Yes, Blood Freak. I have to get my DVDs and Blu-rays up here. It's kind of an ironic thing. Several months ago, because I was getting really bored at home where I was staying, I brought all of my Blu-rays and DVDs there. Now that I've actually moved back out here, I have to go back and grab all those things and take them back here. So that's the process we're in right now.
How far away from here?
2.5 hours.
That's not too bad. It's just finding the time to do it.
Yeah, I could actually do it down and back in one day, but the issue is that my truck is not big enough to haul everything back here at once. So I probably would have to get a small U-Haul.
Yeah.
And load everything up. So we'll get that figured out eventually. And also, we definitely got to do more live watches because Danae is our queen of live watches.
I've been told by some of my friends, the old crowd that I used to hang with are like, Danae can't pick the movies anymore.
Why not? I've had a wonderful time with the movies.
Or if Danae says, I've got a movie and it's cheesy, run.
Oh, yeah. You know, I really miss doing way back in my early college days and high school days, we would all go over to my friend Dave's place. He lived out with his grandmother, and they had this huge living room. They could fit like 20 of us. And I would supply the bad movies. Now, we used to watch stuff like Cannibal the Musical. And I actually introduced them to the Guinea Pig series. Oh, boy.
No, that's something I can't do. Either the Japanese or the American. I'm not touching those.
Yeah, a few of them do not speak to me, and it's been over 20 years. So there.
You know, it's not my fault that my former crowd could not appreciate the intricacies and the entertainment value of Spider Baby. I mean,
well, we should do a live watch. I've got Spider Baby in some place, but I have not watched it yet. So I would like to watch Spider Baby with you.
I have a VHS
awesome.
Copy, and I still have a player.
That's fantastic.
I also have a VHS copy, and this was the only way that I could find it, believe it or not, of The Barbarians.
Ah, there is an import DVD. there is an import DVD. But
it's $40.
So, yeah, it's about $40. But I'll tell you what, I think
but having I would like to do a live watch of the Barbarian too. And that's
all right,
that's another thing I forgot. I'm sorry, I keep talking over you.
Don't worry about it, honey. We'll definitely have to do the
that's
Barbarian.
That's another thing I forgot to mention. I love those. I love post-apocalyptic movies, especially the ones that came out in the 80s. I love those fantasy flicks that came out, like Conan the Barbarian and all of their knockoffs, like Ator and Death Stalker and Barbarian Queen. I love stuff like that.
Yeah, me too. I love the post-apocalyptic stuff, especially with Italian and badly dubbed.
Oh yeah. I love watching the reviews of those on Good Bad Flicks on YouTube, and Cecil's always making these comments like, and there's no gas, there's no rain, but yet they have an endless supply of bearded hair care products.
Yes, they do.
Oh, come on, like, you don't want to get near the open flame with all that hairspray.
Oh, my God, yeah. With all the hairspray, they probably spontaneously combust. That's what happened.
You crimped your hair, too. We're made for each other. I tell you what, that Cecil, he's someone I could be best buds with. I mean, I could just see us watching one of those movies in the same room with him. It would be a blast.
Oh, my God, yes, definitely. Well, I actually, when I can get a place going here, I'm going to create I actually have a full audio recording studio back in my other place. When I get that out here, I'm going to add some more. I'm going to add definitely more microphones. I'm going to see if I can integrate how well the system can integrate with Blog Talk, and so we can actually do like several people hooked up into my computer along with you through Blog Talk, and we can like have a whole group of people watching movies.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah, definitely. It's very doable. I just got to upgrade a few things. Shouldn't be. Yeah, I can do that. Put up some sound dampening equipment. No problemo.
You there?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I'm here.
You got quiet.
So, yep, because I had a message lip up and went, oh, okay.
Is there anything is he done talking or did he get cut off?
No, I got distracted. It's 88. Ooh, look, a squirrel. You know, that type of thing.
You know, if you can hear my cat, she's having a fit for her canned food, so I'm giving her that. Can you hear her?
Oh, yes, I can.
She's very vocal.
I know. You know, Tinkerbell's the same way. She'll talk to the wall. She'll talk to you. She'll talk to me. She'll talk to the couch. Yeah, pretty much. She'll talk to everything. Anywho, so...
It's really funny when we're playing. She'll go, she's so cute when she's angry.
Yeah. That's one thing you should never say to certain people, is you're cute when you're angry, because you'll end up with bruises. Oh, yeah. Yep, yep, yep.
Well, I can say it to my cat. She
oh, yeah,
care.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but if you say that to humans, some humans will go, okay. So, is there anything you want to add in about you?
Well, I also write. Well, I was writing for Wings Chop, and a couple of things put out by another Facebook friend of mine, Mike Halshelter. I'm currently not doing it right now because I have experienced writer's block. I have this tendency to put a lot of pressure on myself, and I'm trying to work on that. However, I have in the works, and God forbid, I don't know why I decided to take this on, but I'm doing a retrospective on the witchcraft series.
That's where the writer's block is coming from.
It is a straight-to-video series that started in the 80s and has gone up the way through 2016. There are 16 of these. The first, I would have to say 5 of them are not that bad. They have kind of like a cheesy quality to them, but they get worse as they go on. And I'm telling you, I have seen more implant scars than I ever cared to in my life.
You know, I actually stopped after 10. I just couldn't do it anymore. They were just, you know, you can make a decent flick with a budget of $50, but you can also make a really, really bad flick with a budget of like a $10,000. So it's not the budget limitation. At least it's just they're bad.
Well, obviously they're popular, or they wouldn't have made so daggum many of them. But basically, they're just really nothing but softcore sex flicks. Bare minimum of plot. It's like they've run out of ideas. And I watched reviews. Allison Pregler, Obscura Lupa, she has a YouTube channel called Movie Night. And I've watched her do, in fact, that's what kind of inspired me to do this, is that I've watched her recap with commentary of these. And that's what got me interested in doing this for the magazine. And I'm like, I want to find this woman and give her a hug and buy her dinner and give her $1 million if I had it, because she deserved it for putting herself through that for us.
I think the allure of the witchcraft movies are the, oh boy, here we go, I'm going to get myself in trouble again. I think it's the attractive women, the slight horror elements, the naughty bits, and that's about it.
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, the first couple ones, they didn't start getting into the sex until the second one, but even then it wasn't quite that bad.
Right.
But they actually had a story, and the acting wasn't that great, but I mean, it had a charm. It had a charm to it. I think later on, the appeal for me was I was born in 68, so it wasn't like I was a young kid when I saw these, but it was like watching porn without watching porn. I think it was the whole naughty appeal.
Yeah.
At back then. And of course now it's not sexy to me anymore. It's repetitive and boring, and it slows down what little story there is.
Yes, it's almost like watching a Skinamax somewhat horror flick with really, really bad CGI for fireballs and stuff. Yeah. I mean, they can be fun. I think you'd have a better time with them if you watch them with friends. Or like watching with somebody who's not afraid to make comments about bad movies.
Well, I think that's why they were endurable, watching them on movie nights. Because, well, first of all, you weren't watching the whole thing. And most importantly, you had Allison's jokes, to make things more interesting. And, of course, I'm writing my reviews while I'm watching this. And I'm trying to come up with jokes. Some of them I have to really stretch.
Yeah. Yep, I hear you on that. Well, all right. It's about 9:30. It's been awesome being your interviewer. You've been an awesome interviewee. Thank you so much, Danae. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and you've been an awesome interviewer. I appreciate you, doing this, and thank you for letting me interview you last week. We got Carl and Kevin are next.
Yes, if you're listening, you two are next on our interview show. Yay! I think I was a little bit too loud with that.
Huh?
All right, so... I think I was a little bit too loud with that. Yikes. So, well, we appreciate everybody listening, and I do have early morning tomorrow for work. It's a new section of training, new section of trainer. So pretty much understanding everything and just remembering port numbers is kind of a pain, but I'll get there. All right, everybody. So thank you so much for listening. Danae, thank you for being my co-host, being my friend, and letting me ask you questions.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're
for
welcome.
Thank you for letting me be a part of this. I really enjoyed it.
You're welcome. You're so welcome. Now, and next show on the Sledge Pit, we will be interviewing Carl. Then we won't be hitting November yet, so we're definitely gonna we'll have Kevin on. And after that, hopefully everything will be all set, and we will go full bore into, well, don't want to say the word professional, but we're going to have some pretty cool shows for you coming up soon.
Don't forget Goring Giggles Part 2.
Yes, Goring Giggles Part 2 will be, oh, it's coming soon. Wait a minute. All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.